This episode of the Educated Ignorance Podcast is brought to you by the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Subscribe to the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network on your favorite podcast platform for the newest episodes of The Data Lab with Professor John Bush and Dennis Mickelson, as well as new episodes every week of Card Subject to Change, our new wrestling podcast with CZ and Nick. And three times a week, releasing episodes on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Fridays, the Educated Ignorance Podcast. On Mondays, you will get full breakdowns of the Sunday night football game, as well as a couple quick-hitting topics from some of the NFL action on Sunday. Tuesday will be a quick-hitting reaction of the Monday night football game, as well as a full slate review of the Sunday games, the biggest and broadest topics from the weekend of football, as well as some college football stuff. And, of course, that Tuesday will be the Elite Eight episode each week for the NFL season, where we reveal the top eight teams, according to myself, in the NFL. And then on Friday, we will be releasing each week a big kind of preview for the weekend's games coming up, as well as the Sinister Six podcast every week with Mac Fulton. He will be joining us every week for the Sinister Six, joint venture of NFL games and college games throughout the year. Our best six picks of the weeks. We will also have some betting stuff in there as well, against the spread, over unders, things like that. So stay tuned for those three episodes a week of the Educated Ignorance Podcast here on the For Frequency Sake Podcast Network. Reminder, be sure to tune in to the fastest rising podcast tag team on For Frequency Sake, Nick and CZ, next week as they sit down with the head coach of the Black and Brave Academy, Merrick Brave, on Card Subject to Change, our weekly wrestling podcast. Coming next Tuesday, September 27th, anywhere you listen to your favorite podcast. Coming up next on the Educated Ignorance Podcast, Thursday Night Football Breakdown. Talk a lot about, you know, where the Steelers can improve over, you know, the next 12 months potentially. And also a really deep, good deep dive, I think, on the Browns and their potential roadmap to success this year. There's a lot there for them, and I really do believe that this team can be very competitive when we get to the end of the year. And, of course, we have Mac on for my favorite Sinister Six segment yet we've done. It's week four. We're in need of a bounce-back week, and I think we are going to give it to you. You know what time it is? It's time to buckle up. Let's roll. Let's get it on. The Educated Ignorance Podcast coming at you right now. Let's get it, boys and girls. So I don't have any notes or anything about this game, or I'm just kind of winging, about to wing this like crazy. But I was able to catch, you know, the majority of the second half, and I saw decent bits of the first half. And it was a game that was what I expected it to be. The first half really was higher scoring than I expected. I thought what we got the second half would just kind of be spread out through the entirety of the game. It took a while for both defenses to maybe adjust. And we'll start with Cleveland. Their defense, you know, much more improved tonight than through the first couple weeks. They definitely left a lot to be desired in the fourth quarter against Carolina. They definitely left a lot to be desired in the fourth quarter last week against the Jets. And they were able to have a really good second half. They gave up a couple drives in the second quarter tonight. But, I mean, it's hard to hold NFL offenses to just nothing. So I was very impressed with how they were able to make adjustments, and they were able to take things away in that third quarter where they really dominated. And then the early part of the fourth quarter where they built that two-score lead. Looking at Pittsburgh, it is a weird spectrum. When you look at what they've done and where they at, they probably should be 0-3. And the clock is ticking on Mitch Trubisky's career. And it's funny, I thought he was pretty decent tonight. That first half, he was really good. I thought he did a great job of moving off of his spot and still delivering accurate balls. I thought they were doing a lot of good. They were doing a lot of things to navigate offensively to give him easy throws. And I thought his receivers played really well. I think Johnson is, you know, he's a guy I still don't really like, but he's still a guy that makes stuff happen. And they also on offense, you know, the thing though I really wish is that Pickens, you know, would get involved more. I feel like they don't target him enough. I really wish that they would do more things to get him involved, you know, on that side. He's a very talented receiver. I think he's easily their best guy, and only 3 catches for 39 yards. He obviously made that ridiculous catch down the sideline in that second quarter, just Odell-esque, and he's such a special talent. I want to look at the Browns offense because I got to admit, man, Jacoby Brissett is really impressing with how he's able to. I know I hate, you know, the cliche thing is manage the game, wooda wooda, etc. But he is doing a great job through 3 weeks now of not putting the Browns in bad spots. He wasn't great against Carolina, but when they needed it most, he delivered on a big drive. Last week, I thought he was dialed in from start to finish. He had the pick at the end of the game, and you know, maybe he could have taken his, he could have not been that aggressive and held off, all things considered. But I thought he was really solid. And then tonight, on time, on target throws. I mean, look, for a guy who was one of the worst quarterbacks in the league last year, and we had a really high sample size of him last year playing for Miami, with Tua's injury, he has been, you know, he has really been this season. Well, it's very impressive with what he's been able to do, how he's been able to protect the football, and he's been really accurate. And there were a couple times the receivers left some stuff out there tonight. Their last drive, their last meaningful offensive drive, they really had a chance to go for the throat and put it out of reach. And it was like a 3rd and 10 after Chubb got stuffed. He hit his back foot and just threw a dart to Amari. Now, it had a little too much juice on it, but Amari should have easily caught it, and he had one guy to miss, and no one, he was gone. Amari, by the way, has been sensational the last 2 games. Really good to see. I really like this Browns team, man. And again, the biggest thing for them, and we'll talk about it in a moment, we'll take a break in a sec, and then we'll come back with where I see these teams going forward. But the thing for Cleveland is, how are they going to sustain in this time without Deshaun? Because if they are good enough for when, like record-wise, when he comes back, this team is good enough to where when he is here, it's not just a team that's frisky. It's a Super Bowl championship-level team. They have a good enough defense. They have a fantastic offense. They have one of the best O-lines in the league. They have one of the best rushing games in the league. They got a high-level number one receiver. And you add Deshaun to the mix, it's a hard, hard recipe to stop. And look, I would easily have them in the Elite Eight if they didn't goof the game up against the Jets at the end of last week on Sunday. They should be 3-0. That's what I'm saying. That game on Sunday could have cost them a playoff spot when you really break it down. Those types of L's happen on a Sunday in this league. It's just how they can't afford to have those types of games when Deshaun is playing or when Deshaun isn't there, because when Deshaun's not there, you don't expect them to win games. Like next week they play the Chargers, and in a couple weeks they play the Ravens and then the Bengals. Like, you don't expect them to be able to have enough in those games without Deshaun. So that's why you have to cherry pick as many of these games as you can to get them under your belt, because of how good this roster is. As long as Jacoby can, now maybe, here's the thing, maybe Jacoby can steal a game against a Cincinnati or an LA or a Baltimore, you know, maybe he can. As long as the rest of the pieces are there, which they are, that's what this team has to look forward to going. For Pittsburgh, it's a bit rocky from here. as we said, they definitely should be 0-3. And the things that are so difficult with them is they have honestly a high-level roster. Not the highest level, but like they have receivers that can do stuff. Claypool, Johnson, as much as I don't like him. And then obviously Pickens, who I really like. Freiermuth's a good tight end. Harris is a back that can do some stuff. Their O-line isn't good at all. That is an issue. Their biggest thing is, you know, maybe their biggest issue is their depth of their roster, and that they are way too top heavy. Like, but they have some of the more, like, they have some of the highest level players in the league when you look at guys like TJ Watt and Cam Hayward and Minka Fitzpatrick. And then on offense, they have not high level receivers, but they have good ones. Harris is a solid back. Like, they have really good guys, but they're the middle and the bottom half part. It's kind of like the Chargers last year. Like 1 through 11 or 12 last year for the Chargers was loaded, and then 13 through 53 was horrendous. This year for the Steelers, it's like 1 through 5, 6 is really, really, really good. And then the rest is, there's some that is meh, and then the rest is very bad. That's their issue. So they are close to where if they can figure out whether Pickett is the guy, and we'll get to him in a moment, or something else, like if it's not him and you can get a quarterback that's worth something in there, and then you can fine-tune stuff like your offensive line and your other parts of your roster, that's where the Steelers can have success in the coming years. You know, a lot of people wanted to say, you know, they were this good with Ben, and then, you know, they expected, oh, Ben was so bad last year. As long as Pickett or Trubisky are just, you know, average, they should be good. Well, the issue is their roster's just not, it's not good, man. From like I said, from like 8 to the rest, they have some really good players. They have some guys we like. And then after that, it's a whole lot of bad. So, like, there's a path for Pittsburgh, but they got to retool and refine some stuff because I caught myself when I said about liking their roster because I don't without when you beat around the margins. Defensively, there's a lot of stuff that's there, some older pieces, but they do have some young guys. Deion Bush is just so inconsistent sometimes, but they got a D lineman who's already got 5 sacks on the year who's really good. They obviously have Cabe Hayward. TJ Watt, though, is out for a while. But, like, again, man, it's just weird for them right now because you're trying to figure out how long are you going to be able to ride with Trubisky, and how long until you try to play Kenny Pickett? The problem, obviously, with Mitch is that he doesn't do enough to win you games. His best is to just not lose games for you, and they obviously don't trust him. And it's a combination of Trubisky's very average, very, very average, and their offensive system as well is horrendous. Matt Canada is not a good coordinator. I don't know where the Steelers go from here this year, but I don't think it's good. It's why I was so confident. Everyone wants to be like, well, Tomlin never finishes below 500. It's like, well, this isn't a good team. And even if Pickett plays, like, this little line's not great. I don't think this team's ceiling is much, and tonight they had a couple moments, but look, they should have been, they stared down the barrel tonight. They should have been 0-3. This team could very well be 2-7 by the time they hit the bye. I don't know how long Trubisky lasts. Pickett will be the starter, I think, at least by week 10. And we'll see how things go with the Steelers. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back to wrap up the Thursday night football portion of the pod next. Make sure you tune into For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch each Sunday during the football season from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. The boys from For Fantasy's Sake will be bringing the fire fantasy football takes, updating you on the week's rankings and injuries, and getting you ready for your fantasy football matchups each and every week. The show is interactive, so be sure to send your questions. You can find them at For Frequency's Sake on Facebook, at FFSQC on Twitter, or you can send them an email at forfantasysakeqc@gmail.com. With baseball playoffs right around the corner, over a month away, and the NFL and college football seasons right on our tail, it's the perfect time of year to get your daily fantasy sports life in order. For Frequency's Sake has you covered every single week. Tune in to For Frequency's Sake's DFS Deep Dive on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch every Friday evening, and uploaded every Saturday morning on your favorite podcast platform, where Brian and the boys will be giving you the best daily fantasy sports advice for each and every week to help you fatten your wallet this season. Again, on every Friday night live on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Twitch, and of course uploaded on your favorite podcast platform on Saturday mornings. DFS advice, DFS deep dive here on the For Frequency's Sake Podcast Network. All right, final thoughts on this game, and I want to keep touching on the Browns here for a moment. Pitchy woo woo, by the way, apparently cost a lot of people the under tonight. I came upstairs with about a half a minute to go to set this up and whatnot. I missed pitchy woo woo. I bet. Oh, it sucks because Al was on the call. Oh, my God. I bet Al Michaels was beside himself. Oh, man, that's tough. All right, real quick about Cleveland. Again, there's a lot with this team to like, and I want to pull their schedule up because I want to try to think of the best-case scenario for them while having the worst case where they don't win any games that you don't expect them to. So I'm going to kind of go through here and give all right, this is who we expect you to beat, and this is who we probably feel like you're not going to beat in the first, till we get to their bye, and then week 13, or week 12, whatever it is. Let's pull this up. So, next week, they go to Atlanta. That should be a win. The week after that, week 5, so you're at 3-1. You get the Chargers, let's say you lose. Week 6, you play the Patriots, 4-2. That's what we were hoping for if you were a Browns fan in the first place when we were thinking Deshaun was only going to get 6 games. You get to 4-2 through 6, you're cooking. Either way, let's say you're 4-2. The next 4 games, it's rough. Let's just say you lose them. Well, hold on, excuse me. Their next 5 games, I should say, are rough. Because you got at Baltimore, Cincy at home, then bye week, and then at Miami, at Buffalo, Bucks at home. If you can get one of those games and go 1-4 and be 5-6, it opens up for you to end the year. At Houston, at Cincinnati. Now, granted, I think the Cincinnati games, both are winnable for them because their D-line is amazing, and I think that the Bengals haven't figured it out yet. Who knows if they will by that time of the year. So you go to Houston, the first game Deshaun is back, of course. Then at Cincinnati, Ravens at home, Saints at home, which Saints team already having to come up and play in cold weather, plus with Jameis, I mean, that should be a win. You go to Washington and then to Pittsburgh. You could end the season 5-1, 4-2 at worst, if you can find a way to win the Baltimore game. Could win out with Deshaun. It's all there. 12-5, 11-6, 10-7 is on the table, and 10 wins very well could be what it takes to get in the AFC. And I'm telling you, man, I'm going to say this all year with Cleveland. If they can get to five, if they can at least be at 5 wins when Deshaun gets back, now that would mean they have to go 5-1 probably for them to make the playoffs, but it's doable. Deshaun is great. This roster, if they can all stay healthy, is amazing. And if they get hot at that point, do not sleep on the Browns to be one of the last teams standing. I'm just telling you that. That's where I'm at with Cleveland. I'm gonna stay on that all year long. I'm going to grade them. You know, like I said, I would have put them in the Elite Eight if they wouldn't have bungled the game against the Jets on Sunday. They played really well and then kind of just got away from them. But this is a really good team, man. And as long as Jacoby can win the games that we expect them to win and maybe play well enough to, you know, where you can shoot over your skis a little bit. Any win in those games we think that they're going to lose, it's found money for the Jets. If you have more than 5 wins going into when Deshaun comes back, you're going to be sitting there thinking, holy shit, we're cooking. And that's absolutely possible. Now, a lot of people are going to think, oh, Deshaun hasn't played in so long, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, absolutely, it's going to take him a while to get going. Like, I think it's going to take him a little bit of time to kind of knock the dust off. I fully expect him in that Houston game to play pretty shitty, you know? But there's a chance he could also gather all of it up and just come out and be lights out. People forget he is one of the best players alive. He's one of the best quarterbacks alive. I get the narrative is to not like him anymore, but we got to call us. We don't get on this show to talk about anything other than what happens in between the lines, whether it's football, basketball, hockey, baseball, whatever. We come on this show to talk about what happens between the lines 99.9% of the time. And in this situation, you know, obviously we talk about free agency, stuff like that, but you get what I'm saying. And trades, whatever. But when we're in this situation, saying anything other than Deshaun Watson when he's on isn't one of the best players in the league, you're lying to yourself. And if the Browns this year can be good enough when he comes back and then get anything close to the highest level version of Deshaun, this team is absolutely a team that could be the last team standing when we get to Arizona in February. But it's early. I just want to paint that picture for the people because it's the first time we've really just sat back and talked about Cleveland. So this is a team I really like. And I know, again, we don't like him. Deshaun, though, has been one of my favorite players since he was in college. And I'm just talking about, obviously, the on-the-field stuff. You know, when I sit back to watch him play, there are not many people that I enjoy to put on my television and watch play football. He is a absolute dynamo. And again, if you watch the games and you don't feel that way about Deshaun or don't think he's high, I understand if people don't like him now, but if you watch the games and don't believe how talented he is, again, you're just lying to yourself. That's why this Cleveland team, when everything comes around to end the season, that's why they traded Baker. They wanted to move up Baker. That's why they went out and got him. And I think people will understand. Hopefully the Browns keep playing well. And shout out to Jacoby Brissett, man. In all honesty, I know we're talking about, hey, just be good enough for when the guy comes back. But he was terrible last year, and through 3 games, he has done, I think, a really, really good job. I think he has been absolutely outstanding. And the team has really bought into him succeeding. And let's be real, he's playing for his NFL career, really, as a potential guy that can be a starter. If he plays well this season while they're waiting for Deshaun, he is absolutely punching his ticket to be an option for a team next year that has a quarterback conundrum. Absolutely. I'll tell you this, he'd be the best quarterback if this version of him would probably be the best version of would be the best quarterback in the Steelers quarterback room. You can't tell me otherwise. He'd be the best quarterback in the Giants quarterback room. Would he be the best quarterback in the Panthers one? I don't know. He'd be the best quarterback on the Falcons. There's a lot of great quarterbacks in this league right now, but Brissett, this version of him through 3 weeks, love it, and I hope he can keep it up. All right, we'll take a break. Mac Fulton, Sinister Six on the other side next. This episode is brought to you by The Corner Tap. Who doesn't need a solid handcuff on their fantasy squad? Grab a bite to eat at Clint's Draft House while watching the noon games, and then head on over across the Moline Rock Island border to The Corner Tap for some libations during the 3 o'clock games. Every Sunday is fun day at The Corner Tap with $3 tall boys, Bloody Marys, Jack Daniels, and $2 PBR drafts. Head into The Corner Tap, 4018 14th Avenue, Rock Island, and get into the end zone. All right, as always, enough bullshit. It's time to get real, son. It is Sinister Six time, and boy, oh boy, we have to be better. That is the theme of the day today, is being better, because holy piss were we bad last week.
Yeah, I thought I was bad week one. I mean, given my record was worse. Man, week three was rough for us.
Yeah, week two was great. It's like we got a little bit lucky. We got some nice breaks, so we decided to say, fuck it, let's just throw shit at a wall and hope it sticks. In review, listen, you know, some stuff happens. Sometimes you take a 12.5-point dog thinking, you know, and you're in the number for like 2.5, 3 quarters, and then it falls apart, Max. Sometimes that happens, right? Sometimes that happens.
I mean, sometimes you just got to be bold with your picks, and I mean, it burns you sometimes.
Sometimes that happens.
We rode a team too far. So.
And then sometimes you write, you know, you take a team that you absolutely got by off the skin of your ass a week ago, and you decide, fuck it, let's ride it again. And sometimes when you do that, they're down 38-7 after three quarters. You're not even close to being within the number.
Considering that was the score after three, they made it a pretty close game.
Yeah, but it didn't matter.
It didn't matter at that point. Yeah.
All right. And then sometimes, Mac, can you quote the question back to me that I asked you last week about the Miami Texas A&M game?
Was it, do we really trust Miami to get 10 points?
No, the question was, I said, if Texas A&M scores 17, all we needed was them to score 12. Guess what? They didn't fucking do it. They scored 9. They're getting inside the 5 and they're kicking the field goals.
Let's just put it this way. Miami's in exile for the rest of the year.
Blacklisted.
They are blacklisted.
Fucking.
Only upside about the weekend was at least I was 2 for 3 in the NFL.
Oh, yeah. And then sometimes you fade your own team and cheer for them coming back down 30 points in the second half. But it's fine. It's fine.
We need to be better.
If they would have actually gave Justin Fields the touchdown in that Bears game in the fourth quarter, I would have went 0-6. If it wasn't for that, I would have went 0-6. Because the Bears would have been like probably like 24. It probably would have been like 17-14 maybe. Or the Bears might have won. Who knows?
But yeah, that is a fair point.
Horrific. That was, oh, man.
All right, what we're going to do now is we're going to take those picks, we're going to dig a grave, and we're going to put them in there and not think about them again.
It's like the little man we buried at Monmouth.
Yep.
Buried the little man. Isn't it wild that team the year before lost to Grinnell? How'd that happen? I would have loved to be on the wall for that game.
Here we are. So,
am I wrong, though? Could you, like, how on earth did that happen in our lifetime?
I mean, I don't know. Our freshman year, we can't say much more. So we went 5-5.
Yeah, but at least we didn't lose to fucking Grinnell.
We lost to Cornell, though.
Very true. Very true. In a weird, wacky fashion. Missed, like, 3 kicks. Couldn't, you know. But, I mean, that happens. That was the only, like, bad one. I just want to know the year. Grinnell was awful. We beat them the year after, like, by 60. I played that day. And then I broke my leg the next day. That's how bad we beat them. I got a rep. I got multiple reps. Mac Fulton.
You did.
Just put that on the resume. God. Can Miami score 12? Nope. I'm still mad.
I guess that we know that answer now.
I hate it here. All right, so the we have officially compiled a blacklist in Miami Hurricanes. They are on it. The Washington Commanders, they are on it.
Hey, I was right there. I mean, I would have told you from a mile away.
Well, but, you know, listen. We're probably not going to put the Bears on here anytime soon.
Not for a while, at least.
You wanted to put the Dolphins on this, but I said...
I did.
I don't know. Too many variables. They could hang around. They could lose like 45-10. Bills are awesome. So I'm not.
They're fun to watch, man. They're really fun to watch.
I don't think we had any college games that barely missed the cut like last week. Like we really wanted Kansas, but there's no way we're gonna lay 8.5.
They played
Kansas,
and they played Friday night too. So like,
there's
kind of threw off there. The only other game that was potentially, I think it was. Didn't I mention Penn? Was it Penn State?
I don't know. I don't think so.
Hold on. I'm going to pull it up real quick.
Michigan State, Minnesota.
Oh, no. The other game was North Carolina, Notre Dame. But that was because the line moved the wrong direction.
Yeah. We talked for a moment about Michigan State, Minnesota.
That was the one.
That line's moved like crazy. It started off like Sparty -1.5, and now it's like Minnesota -3, which is probably the right side, but I don't know. Too much movement
there.
Yeah,
I think it is right.
So, I feel pretty good about this week. A lot better than last week.
I feel like it's more straightforward for us this week.
To an extent. Though, we are going to start at the scene of the crime of Miami not scoring 12. Those fucking bastards. All right. In Jerry World, question... who has a worse quarterback situation, Texas A&M or Dallas, the Dallas Cowboys?
Honestly, I'd rather have Cooper Rush as my quarterback than Haynes King right now, or Max Johnson.
Hey, though, in all fairness, Max Johnson controlled the game, didn't fuck it up like Haynes King
I will take my bow there and say that, you know, Max Johnson should have been the starter from day one.
Should have, I guess. I guess.
I said that, but here we are.
Here we are. Would they have beaten App State with him? I don't know. But that's neither here nor there. They got back on track. And now they honestly can get back on track. Listen, if they would have lost to Miami, as we said last week, they were staring down the barrel of 1-5 in the face because they have this. They got Mississippi State. They got Bama. Not an easy stretch of life. Now they overwhelm Miami. Taylor Van Dyke couldn't hit a wide open, receiver if, you know, his family got kidnapped and their lives were on the line. He was horrendous. We rated him so much higher than he has any right to be. That was so bad. I regretted every decision we ever made watching that dude play quarterback. I was like, what on earth was that performance? He was terrible. Anywho, Arkansas coming in. They won this game last year. This was kind of the Texas beatdown was kind of their, like, hey, we're kind of frisky. And then when they played A&M and they won like 20-10, but they put them in a meat blender, or they pulverized them for 60 minutes. And it was like, you know, this was the, hey, Arkansas's good game. Now, can this be the, hey, Texas A&M is kind of okay game? Or can Arkansas, who is catching 1.5, I don't know if them being dogs is the right side. I feel like after last week, they struggled for three quarters against Missouri State. Now, granted, Missouri State is feisty, but then all of a sudden, Missouri State just couldn't block them for the fourth quarter. That was an absolute mess. And Arkansas started dominating them up front, and they kind of ran away with it late. Arkansas, Mac, would you say they're better than we thought they would be at this stage, even though they kind of flirted with disaster last week for a half?
I mean, I think they're as good as advertised, like in the preseason. Yes, they lost key players going into this year, but when you still have your quarterback in KJ Jefferson, you still retained your head coach in Pittman. Like, everything is lining up that they can replicate what they did last season.
And Jefferson's, like, almost throwing better than last year without an NFL weapon.
Yeah. I totally agree. His mechanics look a lot better. Everything looks more tight and, like, straight to the point and not loopy anymore. And losing Treylon Brooks, you would think his stats would, you know, regress a little bit. But here we are, you know, through three games, and the dude still is going for 770 and six touchdowns.
And so he's a threat, and he's a threat in the running game. And Rocket Sanders has been a stud at running back.
Yes, he has been.
He has been really good. But this, and obviously, this is a Texas A&M defense that is going to grind. I probably think the under is the play in this game. I don't remember what it is. I didn't actually write it on the sheet this week.
48.5, which, yes, it's an underplay all day.
A&M, as the 1.5-point favorites, they can save a lot winning this week, because then you can still, obviously the playoffs is out of the realm of possibility after the App State game, which is a disaster for them. Like, they should be hanging around. They have too much invested in too many of the right spots to not be a team that is on the border of the playoff. But a New Year's Six Bowl is alive if they can win this game and then rally, because then really it's like, all right, if you win this game, then it goes back to like, okay, their only loss, hopefully the rest of the year, if you're an optimist, is the Bama game. They could really, you know, get going throughout the rest of the year.
My question for you then, I guess, is if A&M rights the ship completely, they get hot at the right time, right before Bama. They beat Bama again. Let's just say, I don't think it will happen, but let's just say it does. And they finish the year 11-1, 12-1 if they go to the SEC championship.
Yeah.
They're back in contention for a playoff.
Yeah, no, they would have to win out. I'm just saying with the Bama loss. If they,
I agree.
Because I don't think they'll beat Bama. Now, granted, here's the thing, though. If they do, you know, you win this, you win against Mississippi State, then you play Bama to start, you know, early October. What is Bama's issues? Their offensive line has been disastrous. They can't separate. The issue isn't, there's no, look, we have 1,000 question marks about Texas A&M's offense. Their defense is still for real. Their defense is still playing really well. Their problem is their offense of scheme is horrendous. But, again, Max Johnson was able to keep them afloat, and Devin Achane and Anaya Smith, they were actually able to get them the ball in positions to make plays. So maybe that's a step in the right direction. However, with all that said, I'm just betting this game on principle. I'm going to take Arkansas with the 1.5. I would love it if it was more, obviously, but I'm just going to say, we saw Miami. Like, we obviously know their offense we cannot trust. Their coach we cannot trust in big games. We know that Arkansas, we know they've got some moxie with Sam Pittman in big games. We know we can trust KJ Jefferson and this offense to be feasible. They're not going to have to score too much. I think they can find a way to out-grit A&M as long as their defense can continue to keep A&M's offense in shambles. I think this will be like a 17-14, 20-17 type of game. I think the under is going to clear with ease, and I think Arkansas is going to win, and that's why I have Arkansas plus 1.5.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on Arkansas 1.5. I think giving Arkansas points in this game, even though it's in Texas, I don't really think home field, like, there's no really home field advantage is going to play a role here. Arkansas is going to travel well.
Yeah, it's
1.5. So it's a lot going in the Jerry World.
Yeah, it's a neutral site game. This is the Jones Bowl, baby.
KJ Jefferson is just too, I think it's going to be too much. And we've seen with teams with very strong run games against, you know, with A&M, if they can control the football, A&M's in trouble because they take forever to move down the field offensively.
Exactly.
So I think, because we saw that with App State, like once App State had the ball on offense, A&M was never going to touch the ball again.
This could be
if Arkansas can touch that, kind of like use that playbook, but like also snap on those big plays. I do agree. I think it's going to be in the range of like 20 to 13, 21, 17, Arkansas.
They're not going to take total, because App State's offense just couldn't do much outside of, you know, a few things here or there, and they grinded a lot. But if they can take that type of style, and the book is 39 to 21 minutes time of possession in favor of the Razorbacks at the end of the game, then the juices are moving, and we're feeling fantastic about Arkansas on the 1.5.
Exactly.
All right. Moving on. I'm going to skip one. We're going to go to this one next. I want to go Oregon and Washington. Oregon at 18th in the country. Washington State at plus 6.5. Washington State, that big win a couple weeks ago against Wisconsin on the road, knocking off the Badgers. Very impressive. It's a weird spot here, but this is one of those situations, Mac, where do we trust Oregon on the road laying this much against a team that a lot of people, including us, think has some fight? And I want to throw a theory at you real quick, and I want to see if you're with me on this. It's on the Pac-12 in general, okay? So we obviously kind of all wrote the Pac-12 off, right? Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I think we all agree that they were either the fourth or fifth best conference in college football.
I saw someone talk about this, and they made a fantastic point, and I'm with them. You got to think, when the COVID year. All right, so look at the year right before that. You had Oregon, Utah. Both of those teams were really good. You still had a couple other frisky teams in the Pac-12 that were solid. In 2019, Oregon won the Rose Bowl that year. Utah was the was ranked fifth going into that weekend. They would have made the playoff if they wouldn't have got beat by Oregon going into that weekend, if you don't remember. So, like, the Pac-12, like, before COVID was still solid, just not as down as we thought they were. But then the COVID year happens. They barely play. Lots of teams aren't even able to practice together. And basically the entire West Coast loses a year compared to the rest of college football, way worse than the other powers. Last year, I think, was a struggle, but a lot of those teams really kind of finding their footing again. And what are we seeing now? Look, Oregon bounced back with a really nice win last week. Even like the Georgia game aside, we both agree Georgia's going to do that to everybody. But look at some other really good teams in the Pac-12. USC has been balling. Washington, huge win. Don't look at that score and think that was close. They took Michigan State to pound town on Saturday. Washington State gets a huge win on the road. Oregon State's undefeated. That game in Corvallis on Saturday is going to be really frisky. The fact that it's on the Pac-12 network is an absolute shame. That game is going to be awesome between the Trojans and the Beavers. Oregon, as we stated, they're a really solid team. Utah is a team that is that is highly ranked, and we think a lot of. Obviously, Utah last year, withstanding other than them, last year not many big Pac-12 teams showed out. Oregon had a nice win here or there, but the bottom of the from the middle third to the bottom of the conference was so bad. But now the conference is rising up, and all these teams have got their footing again. And transfers are going there after they pretty much avoided them last year. The Pac-12, Mac, I mean, saying they're back is hyperbole, but what do you think about that kind of theory? It seems like last year it was almost a kind of a reset year for a lot of teams in that league. And now this league is really deep, really good, really viable. And there's a lot of really solid teams in it.
I agree to an extent. Like, I do think there is three teams that can probably be top 15 teams in the country this year that are there. And they have another batch of, like, four teams that are going to be either ranked or just on the outside. And that's going to be, like, your Washington State, your Oregon State, who are going to have a good year, but they're not going to be, like, phenomenal. But yeah, I think they definitely, from the last few years that we've seen, they have taken massive steps in the right direction. And I think for them, it's perfect timing, especially when you're losing two of your biggest names in your conference, given Oregon football is a lot more prestigious than UCLA football, but as a name, UCLA is a lot bigger. And that could be very, very lucrative for them when they go and try to realign again this next time around.
Yeah, you are right. And maybe they can snag some of them West Coast Group of Five schools, or something, you know, in that vicinity to really align and boast up what they've got when we get to the weirdness of the College Football Super League. But, I mean, whenever that Super League does happen, which we think it'll happen before the end of this decade, all those schools will be invested in it because they are at least a part of that power conference. So, but I just wanted to make that statement about the Pac-12, and I feel like we should put some respect on their name. Anyway, on the point of this game, Mac, Oregon-Washington State, where are you feeling? What are you feeling in this?
This game is going to be an interesting one, I think. It might be one of the more entertaining games. Oregon has bounced back, and they've looked like night and day from week one. Again, like we said, Georgia doing that to teams, we just got to expect that they're just going to be dominating throughout the SEC.
Oh, yeah.
Until they have to go play in the SEC championship. But what Oregon did against BYU last week, I think, was a clear indication of how the steps that they have taken since week one, and they're like trending in the right direction again. Do I think they're going to be a one-loss team this year? No. I think they're going to be probably a 9-1 team. But that's not bad considering you have a new coach in Dan Lanning.
There's way too many good teams in the Pac-12 for them to be able to just mow through people. Because they're going to eventually, they always have their one stinker in the conference. They always have one they shouldn't lose. And especially now with, Bo Nix as your quarterback. I think Oregon, they're definitely in the 8-4, 9-3 range this year, I believe.
Yeah, and I think, I don't want to do this, but I'll take Oregon here.
Ooh.
I'll swallow the points.
So Oregon minus 6.5.
From what we saw last week, against BYU, I think BYU is a better football team than Washington State is, and they were able to dismantle BYU pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to keep building on that and keep going.
All right. I'm going Washington State plus the points. And here's why. The Bo Nix ride, it's not a easy ride on calm waters, Mac. It's a roller coaster. And my logic is to fade Bo Nix. That is my sole purpose of taking Washington State in the points. I will not be upset if this comes back to bite me in the ass. If that happens, Oregon is blacklisted. But I just wanted to throw that out there. That's where I'm feeling with Washington State plus the points. It's more of a fade Bo Nix line than a not feeling well about Oregon line. That's where I'm at. And I think Washington State at home, hey, boys, I don't need you to win. I just need you to not lose by more than a touchdown. All right.
Just keep it close.
Keep it close, baby. Mac Fulton, I don't know if you'd call this the game of the week in college football, but it's pretty close. Florida at Tennessee. Everyone knows how great this rivalry is, even though Florida's owned them forever. The games are always batshit crazy. The fan bases are also batshit crazy. And this game has easily the most batshit crazy line I've ever seen. Because Tennessee is favored by 10.5 at home against Florida. Mac, I'm going to ask you this question, and I want to know where you're at on this. Is Tennessee way overvalued and way overhyped, maybe? What am I not seeing here?
Man. So Tennessee, I think this year, going into this year, they they weren't slept on, but they weren't like talked to where they are at now.
Well, yeah. Well, here's the thing. Their offense is stupid good. Their offense is stupid good. They got a high-level receiver, and Hendon Hooker's really good. We missed out on ranking some of the Tennessee guys, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I agree 100% there. I think what reaffirmed everybody's belief about Tennessee is what they did going to play Pittsburgh. That game kind of showed what Tennessee was, that they can get up for big games and not lose, which they've been doing in the past. Probably for the last decade.
That is a fair point. They also...
is probably the most, I would say, I don't know, probably the most respected and like highly anticipated team that came out of Tennessee this year is, since the team with Josh Dobbs and Alvin Kamara. And that team weighed a stinker that year.
They went, 9-4 probably?
They were 8-4, yeah.
8-4. I mean, listen, they...
So, like...
They played a lot of weird games that year, man.
Yeah, they did.
Hey, they also had Juwan Jennings, who's now one of the top receivers in San Francisco. So shout out to them.
You're not wrong. But Tennessee, I think they are a better football team this year. My concern with everything here for this game is I can't trust Anthony Richardson at the quarterback position.
Okay.
The guy is way too reckless with the ball. He's still young.
His,
I think that's a big reason.
His flat out passing numbers, Mac, are gross. They're gross, Mac. They're so bad.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
41-77 for 423 yards in three games
and
no touchdowns, four picks. And people really want to tell me he's a first round pick. On what earth? What tape? What statistics? Man,
I need to see him actually maintain a game, protect the football, and do more than just running the ball, because we're not seeing that at this moment. And Hooker is going to go in there and just completely outshine him and make him look foolish.
So here's the question that I have. Does Tennessee's defense have enough? So here's the reason I was impressed with Pittsburgh. I thought that game was going to be 45-42 type of thing, and it wasn't. Tennessee, now granted, Slovis got hurt at the end of the half, but they only gave up 17 at half. Now, Tennessee, it was like offense is awesome, high-powered, full force, and defense is insanely gross, like bad. But
okay, I mean, you could say the same thing about Florida this year too.
No,
their defense is extremely bad too.
No, this is what I'm getting at. So like the reason I'm like, all right, I can see it with Tennessee, is they showed me against Pittsburgh that they were able to win a game that they didn't have to score 45 points against a team that had a pulse and had legitimate offensive, depth and prowess. How do they sustain stuff throughout the year? I don't know. It's going to be interesting. A part of me, here's my biggest issue with this line. It's that at the end of the day, Tennessee hasn't been tested to where, even in a sense, they haven't played a quarterback like Richardson, who is really going, he's a horrendous just quarterback as a passer. But as an athlete and a college quarterback that's going to mix things up, he's an absolute dynamo and a ridiculously talented guy. So I understand why some people love it, but I feel like the thing that I always get mad about college quarterbacks that I see an absolute ceiling on is people try to tell me that they're a first-round pick, like Anthony Richardson and Taylor Van Dyke and Will Levis, and I'm like, shut up, man. Shut up. Like, you want to put these guys and not talk about guys like Bryce Young and C.J. Stroud, especially Bryce Young, who does everything for Alabama. Because if it wasn't for him, the carriage, the castle would burn down, the car would be run off the road like Princess Diana was. Shout out to her. I'm just saying, man, not a lot of good things without him. And people want to tell me Anthony Richardson, Heisman guy, first-round pick, wooda-wooda, whatever. I'm just saying, off my tangent. In this case of Florida, the reason, here's what. I have Florida plus 10.5, and it's because I just think it's a ridiculously, way too high amount, way too much points. Way too many points for a game like this where we haven't seen Tennessee prove that they can actually handle a team like Florida, who I do think is solid. They have attributes. Napier's a good coach and whatnot. Like, I won't be shocked if Tennessee wins, but I will, like, if Tennessee wins and covers and I lose and I'm on the wrong side of this, then it will be me saying, all right, Tennessee, I believe in you, and you're legit. Like, SEC championship playoff team, no, I don't think so. But then I would definitely believe in them. They're easy. Like, if they win this game and blow Florida out, which would be essentially what they're doing, Mac, if they cover, I would say you're easily the second-best team in the East. You're easily one of the 10 to 12 best teams in college football, and you're a team that could win on any weekend if the right things happen. I need to see that before I believe it. That's why I'm going with 10.5 for Florida, because it's hard for me to say, yeah, Tennessee's going to blow Florida out when they've beaten them once in the last, like, two decades.
I understand what you're saying. I think all your points are valid. I just don't know if this Florida offense is competent enough to get into a shootout with the team to keep it close.
That's fair. That is fair. You know, I mean, at the end of the day, if it wasn't for USF center being a double agent, they might have lost to the Bulls last weekend. Like, they very well could have.
Yeah.
And they'd be winning too.
And also the fact of this game being at Neyland Stadium, I think that gives them a couple points. I think Tennessee does cover. 10.5 is a lot, but I think this offense is so dynamic, and it might be I think Tennessee might be the third or fourth best team in this conference. So, and that's saying a lot considering where Tennessee was a few years back.
Their coach is Heupel, right?
Yes.
Okay. That's what I thought.
It was Pruitt, and then he got chased out. So,
no, I'm with you, man. Like, again, their offense is great. They're taking the right steps. They have really good players. I'm sure even Nick would agree, we missed on ranking some of their guys in the top 50. Like, Hendon Hooker's been really good. And as a college quarterback, he's very dynamic.
Look, I mean, I think at the end of the year, we'll need to go back and, like...
Yeah, we'll do a revision. We'll do a revision.
Yeah.
All right, next, real quick, we're going to actually take a quick break. We'll come back with the NFL slate here on the Sinister Six Pod. We'll be right back. So it is brought to you by Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar in Rock Island. It's the place to be every Sunday this football season. Barbecue Chris will be in the house every week smoking the place up with his amazing menu or mouth-watering barbecues. Cavies will have every game on inside and outside their numerous TV screens. Plus, you can play their adult video games, and they have the loosest slots around. Check out Kavanaugh's Hilltop Bar, 1228 30th Street in Rock Island. For Fantasy's Sake has teamed up with Route 96 Boutique to raise a little more cash for Toys for Tots this season. From September 11th until the end of November, 10% off of all purchases made with Route 96 on Sundays will be donated to us for our Toys for Tots drive. At Route 96, they believe in girl power. They want a place that people of all shapes and sizes can shop and feel empowered and beautiful. They want you to be the best you possible, and they are committed to bringing you different styles while also providing some basics to express the true you. You can find them on Facebook and at Route96Boutique.com. Again, that's Route96Boutique.com. All right, welcome back. No alt lines, no teases. Maybe eventually we're going to just start throwing... Maybe that's what we should add to the show, Mac, is every week we just throw out some ridiculous 17 teaser together and see if it hits.
That would be something, man. That would be something.
Put like $5 on it. Like, remember when we were talking about after the over-unders pod, when we were all talking about throwing a bet together that had to do with the Colts? And thank God we didn't do that.
I still think they're going to win the division. But
that's fine, but that one seed value that we thought could be a thing there, I don't know.
I honestly think we have still, if we would have gone through with it, with the doing the eight division winners, I think we still probably would have hit that.
Well, it would have been like all the Colts bets. It would have been like, guys, they had no shot, but we liked the process. We liked the process. We liked the process. It made sense. That's what we would be telling ourselves. We're going to be like, God damn it. You know what we should do, though, is when Nick do the inevitable MLB playoff podcast that we haven't talked about yet but know is going to happen, we need to do like a 5-minute segment at the beginning of it and talk about who we think the first coach fired will be. And it definitely might be Frank Reich.
Yeah, if they don't turn it around, he might be the guy.
He very well could be. All right, we're going to start this off. Raiders-Titans is our first NFL game. Raiders, 2.5-point favorites. The theme of the NFL week. It's like the theme of the Sinister Six this week, Mac. Bounce back. Bounce back. And this right here is the bounce back bull. 2-0-2 teams. Two teams that people thought would be better than they are. Granted, people thought the Raiders would be better than what people thought the Titans would be. But regardless, this is the bounce back bowl. It is bounce back week for us, so it is fitting to start off the NFL portion of the six with this matchup. Raiders -2.5 going to Tennessee? Question mark? Or is this in Vegas? Can you get that for me?
It's in Tennessee.
Okay, that's what I thought. All right, Mac, I'll start with you. Give me a good spiel on this if you could for me.
All right. So I'm just going to keep it one on the Tennessee side. I think they are very, very mediocre, and they need to figure out their quarterback room quick, or it'll be too late for them to even figure out what the hell's going on. And that means Malik Willis needs to be probably starting this upcoming week.
No.
Ryan Tannehill has been terrible this year.
You going there, though? You're going to – that's coaching malpractice.
I'm just saying,
the fact that he even got reps at the end of that Buffalo game, it looked like they were trying to kill him.
So, I mean, you've always been the person who says trial by fire. I've always been the guy who said give him time, let him build up, and let him go. I just think this situation in Tennessee might get out of their hand too fast. They may need a shot in the arm.
I understand.
It might be that.
I guess maybe I just haven't thought of it. And maybe my thing is I just don't think Malik Willis is good. That's just where I'm at.
I don't think he's as good as he was advertised coming out of the draft. So I just think that Tennessee, they have a quarterback problem. Tannehill's not their guy. Who's next in line is Malik Willis. That's my point.
Nick Wright has a fantastic spiel on the career arc of Ryan Tannehill, and it might be spot on.
Vegas.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay, so Vegas. I want to hear what you say about Tannehill.
So Nick, I'm stealing this from Nick Wright. Shout out to him. Quit being defensive about the Chiefs anytime people talk about the Bills being good. Anywho, That's my Nick Wright tangent today. He's goated though. Anyway, he says about about Brian Tannehill. Shit, I just buried the lead. He basically says he's got the career arc now of Jake Delhomme, where Delhomme was good and won a good amount of games, even made a Super Bowl. Granted, Tannehill never made a Super Bowl, but he's won a lot of games, made the AFC title game a few years ago, and then for Jake Delhomme, they were the one seed. And they hosted, it was the year the Cardinals made the Super Bowl with Kurt Warner and Fitz and whatnot. They played the Cardinals, and Delhomme threw, I think, like 5 picks in a game in Carolina in the divisional round. And after that, it broke him. Like, he was done, basically. I think they said he only started like 16 games the rest of his career. Tannehill, as the one seed, hosting the Bengals, a team they should beat, throws 3 picks. One to start the game, a horrendous one right in the middle of the game, one basically to end the game, and now 2 weeks in, he's been pretty mediocre, to say the least. I don't think he's the reason they're 0-2, but I think he's been pretty bad. Like, he hasn't done anything to help.
Okay. So he hasn't helped Tennessee's cause.
Right. So I thought that was a very interesting take, and I was like, ooh, I like that. That's a good one.
Okay. So, back to the Vegas now.
Sorry.
Am I wrong to say that Las Vegas is the best 0-2 team in football?
Great point.
We are 9 points away from them being 2-0.
Yeah, but...
But last week, they should have won that game.
Yeah, yeah, last week.
They would have been able to hold on to the football.
I can't say that they... Damn it, I was going to say the Colts, but they're not fucking 0-2. Shit. Oh, the Bengals. No, the Bengals. Bengals are better than the Raiders,
again,
I think. Yeah, the Bengals are better than the Raiders.
Okay, I can concede that. Joe Burrow needs to step up a little bit, but yeah, I can give you that.
Bengals are more different. Because there's the thing, there's only four 0-2 teams and two 0-1-1 teams.
My point being is that Vegas at least should be 1-1 right now, and
yeah.
Their record does not show how good they actually are.
No. I don't see, and here's the thing, like, the regression that kind of happened this week. What did I say? The reason I was hammering the Vegas under, Mac, is like, they won all these games by ridiculous, crazy last play things.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't going to happen again. Now,
no, I agree 100% there.
Now, I'm shocked that Derek Carr has started as bad as he has. The, what, five picks through two games is stunning. Very stunning.
I don't know. How much have you watched The Herd this week?
This week, not much. I watched some of his. Actually, I mean, I watched a decent amount, but nothing on the Raiders. Why? What do you got?
Okay, so he was talking about. Colin was talking about quarterbacks and like their production level this like so far the first 2 weeks, and he goes, he was talking about Derek Carr, and they're like, "Are you concerned? Or are you happy with his performance? Stuff like that." And he goes, "Like it's pretty much where I expect him to be. He has done nothing wrong to hurt this team." He's actually kept this team afloat and kept this team competitive in games. It's not his fault his team doesn't know how to keep control of the ball.
So I said this Sunday, like, listen, the reason they lost Sunday was because Kyler Murray just went bananas. Like,
he had a game of all games for him.
Kyler Murray kind of had his y'all must have forgot game, you know, where he, you know, the Sugar Ray, I think it was Sugar Ray, y'all must have forgot. That was spectacular. And he absolutely dominated in the second half. And when Kyler's on, he's incredible. He's one of the most special players in the league. There are some concerns with the Raiders because it is weird with them. Like, again, the Carr protecting the ball thing. Who would have thought that Renfro fumbled and they got lucky, and then literally the next play he fumbles and they house it? Like, again, those are the types of plays that they were on the other side of last year. So all of my reasoning to fade the Raiders this year has been like lucky last year. Same thing with the Bengals.
Like, you're fading them is well warranted. I agree. For this game though, I'm taking Vegas here.
Yeah, me too.
I think they're the better team. They're the better team.
Me too. Yeah, absolutely. Like, yeah, road favorites, especially in a game where this could be tight, could be tough. Now, Tennessee's got to get Derrick Henry going, man. Like they do. He's been really stifled. Can they get tipped? Like this could be the defense for it to happen. But we have an early candidate for a loser leaves Town Bowl on Sunday between these two teams, because I don't think either one of these teams make the playoffs, but definitely whoever loses this game is big red X, wouldn't you say?
They're donezo. Yeah. I agree. They're donezo after this.
All right, moving on. Bengals on the road against the Jets. Bengals are -4.5. The Jets, shout out to Amari Cooper for getting his Odell Beckham on and not wanting any of the smoke on an onside kick. Can't believe nobody talked about that whatsoever like they did Odell. But whatever. I digress. Bengals -4.5 on the road against the Jets. Now, the Jets being, you know, in this spot, less than a touchdown dog is very odd to me. I don't say they have no business winning last week, but it was impressive that they were able to find a way. Look, man, a lot of their young players are playing well, and Joe Flacco found a way, I guess. It makes no sense, but, you know, Garrett Wilson was great they have young guys on that offense that played well. Breece Hall, Michael Carter, some of their O-linemen. Their defense has younger guys that are solid. But if there was, like, the Bengals have to figure this out. Like, they have to. And Burrow does have to be better. Like, people want to say on the offensive line all they want, but it's the same thing I talk about sometimes now with Justin Fields. Like, you hold on to the ball too long, you're back there waiting for something to happen. You got to get rid of the ball. And a lot of these sacks sometimes can't, like, they're on Burrow. They're on Burrow. You can't just wait for the perfect play. Now, here's the thing, too. His offensive coach, Zach Taylor, needs to fucking design easy throws for him. When you have the best offense on the planet Earth, it shouldn't be that hard. But hey, who am I? I'm just a dumb media guy, as they told me a couple years ago. What do I know? Anywho, Bengals minus 4.5 is the right play. For the love of God, Zach Taylor, figure it out, because a lot of us are starting to realize that you're a dumbass that got carried to the Super Bowl last year by luck and Joe Burrow being really good. If the Bengals don't cover this game, not just win, but if they don't even cover, 5 alarm fires all over the shop for the Bengals.
And the Bengals will be blacklisted.
Yeah, if the Bengals don't cover this game, blacklist. And this is the first time we bet them, but like, blacklist city if they don't cover this week.
I don't know. The Bengals are not the same team as they were last year, and like, I am going to have to own this up because I thought they were going to be a lot better than what they are. I was one of the few during the over and under podcast that we did that I had them as the over. Right now, they don't look like even close to that kind of team.
I think they'll figure it out and they'll be around, but there's too many good teams in the AFC to be.
And so
there's too many good AFC teams to lose games like they did. Like, okay, the Steelers game, whatever, it happens. You have a lot of shitty turnovers, that's bad luck, whatever. The Dallas game, there is no excuse for that whatsoever.
So my reasoning here is this is bad for Cincinnati with the start. And if they continue this path, even if they win a few games and they still are a losing record, come week 11 or 12, yeah, come week 12 or 13, they're in trouble because that division gets a lot better. Like, that's a lot tougher of a division when Deshaun Watson comes back.
True, but I don't believe he will play the I think the Bengals get him twice before he comes back.
No, I'm just saying, like, they're digging themselves into a hole right now. That this the AFC North is a lot better than what we all anticipated. And Baltimore might run away with this division.
To an extent, yeah. I think people are underselling. Here's the thing. I would have put the Browns eighth in the Elite Eight if they would have won Sunday. They're awesome. The Browns are awesome. But that was a game that they just let get away. And the fact that they lost that game Sunday to the Jets might have cost him a playoff spot. Because with Deshaun, the thing is, there's wins on this schedule that you can bank on. And Brissett hasn't been the reason, like, they lost. I wouldn't have thought that any of these games they would have lost would have been because of, like, Brissett. Like, it wouldn't have been just Brissett being terrible. Brissett was solid on Sunday. He threw that pick at the end of the game, but, I mean, it happens. They were trying to get a late field goal. But the Browns, that game Sunday might have cost them a playoff spot, because you can't drop a game like that, especially when you're trying to bank as many wins before Deshaun gets back as you can.
So everything I'm saying about the Bengals, I still really love their talent, mm-hmm. but Joe Flacco has been a lot better than what we all anticipated filling in for Zach Wilson. Michael Carter, Breece Hall, they're doing enough to keep the run game solid, but we're seeing Corey Davis, we're seeing Garrett Wilson. They're all stepping up and making huge plays for this Jets team. And they're a lot better than what we all gave them credit for in the offseason.
Well,
so I'm taking the 5.
Okay, is it up to 5 now? So you can get it at 5?
Yeah, that's what it says on here. Sorry. All right.
So that's fine. So you're taking Jets plus 5?
Yes.
Ballsy.
Yes.
Ballsy, but fuck it. I like it. I like it. You thought we wouldn't be.
Again, I said this to you on our break where I was like, I talked myself into taking Oregon. I think I just talked myself into taking the Jets there.
Yeah, so, well, to that green. That green, boy, it's going to be really good or really bad on Sunday.
I guess so.
On this weekend. Poor guy. All right, Nack Fulton. And, hey, we're tied coming into this week, by the way, so there's some distance now.
I did enough to tie you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, you did. You had you did. All right. Final game, Ravens on the road in New England. Patriots catching 3. Ravens minus 3. I'd take this at Ravens minus like 6. There's no way they don't win this by 1,000. Patriots are terrible. The Ravens are really good. Let's not act like you know, they had a once-in-a-million kind of thing happen to them on Sunday. They're still great. Let's all calm down. Let's not blow the boats over yet. This is a layup here. If this loses, we have a problem, right? Like, there's no way.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's Ravens. It's a no-brainer Ravens. And I think it was about the Patriots. We saw the blueprint of how they have to win football games last week.
What? Play Mitch Trubisky?
No. Yeah, that's funny. But no.
Am I wrong?
They need to jump out early and maintain a lead. Like, they need to get the lead early, and then they can maintain it the rest of the way. Because they're not going to be able, a team that comes back when they're down, like, down 10 to 15 points. This team has no offensive weapon to push them downfield. They don't trust Mac Jones anymore, which, you know, you would think being a second-year quarterback, he would take that next step.
Can you blame them? He's not good.
Can you blame Mac Jones at all? Because they're not giving him any tools to work with, especially when your offensive coordinator is not even an offensive-minded coach.
Listen, I'm not, you know what? You got me. You're not wrong. You are not wrong.
So, like, I don't know if we can really blame Matt Jones for a lot of this.
Well, he's just, you know, he's
like, he's not as good as everybody thinks he was going to be, but, like, he's not a terrible quarterback.
So, are you a Mac Jones sympathizer? Is that what you are?
I am indifferent about Mac Jones.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It sounds like right now you're beating the Mac Jones drum, Mac. I'm just saying.
No, I was literally telling you the exact reason why they're there in the situation.
Well, the way that was saying, it sounded like, you know, Mac Jones, raw deal, better than we think. Shitty situation. Belichick's a fraud.
Hold on. Is everything I said there, am I wrong?
Not necessarily.
Not point proven. So I'm literally indifferent about the guy, but I'm calling a spade a spade.
Yeah, I'm calling a spade a diamond. Go fuck yourself.
So Baltimore, that's an easy point. Take the points. I will eat 3 points with Baltimore on
for
the road.
Dinner. We'll eat 3 points.
Lamar
for
Jackson is just stupid. So dynamic this year. Bateman's taking that next step like we needed him to see. Like, we needed to see that from him. Mm-hmm. Duvernay's had some popping performances. So, like, this team is coming together, and they look very dangerous.
They're very solid. They're very solid. NFL ones that almost missed the cut, I don't think there were. Like, there are a couple of them, but it was, again, like, too many variables for this week for us for some of these other games. But our final card, so the six games, Arkansas, Texas A&M, we both have Arkansas plus the points, 1.5. Florida and Tennessee, I have Flo Rida plus 10.5. You have Tennessee minus 10.5, so bit of a doozy. Oregon at Washington State. I have Washington State in the points, plus 6.5. Mac has Oregon swallowing the points, and he instantly regrets that. Bengals-Jets in MetLife. Bengals minus 4.5. I have the Bengals. Mac has the Jets. Mac got the number at 5, which we will give it to him. All right, if you're taking... No,
what was the original number?
The original one I had was 4.5.
I'll take 4.5 still.
Okay.
ESPN just said 5. Sounds like screw it, 5.
Okay, 4.5. I thought you put 4.5 in the chat. That's what I thought. You want to peek on that?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, cool. So 4.5. Because I was gonna say we'll just each have the separate, but that would have made a difference if we technically would have both won there. Which could have happened. Like, if you would have won by, or if the Bengals would have won by 5, you could have got a push on your end, and I would have won. So, all right. Ravens, Patriots, we both have the Ravens -3. Probably our lock of the week, right? That's easily the lock of the week for us.
I think that's the mortal lock, yeah.
The mortal lock. Shout out to them. We're doing better than Big Cat, that's for damn sure. And then Raiders, Titans, Raiders -2.5. We are both on that one. So, bounce back week. Bounce back, yes. Bulls.
We'll have a new leader after this week.
Yeah, guaranteed. We're set by 3 games. So unless one of these games, which actually no, none of the games that we're off on can push because they all got hooks. So as long as, you know, actually it's impossible. We will have a new leader. We will not be tied anymore. Hopefully one of us is good enough this week to get over 500 again, which would be great, which is all I care about this year. Week 2, man. What a bad – or week 3. What a bad week. What a bad week.
I thought I was getting back on track after week 2. It was looking really good, and then last week it
– And then we got depression. Shot into the ocean.
And then it was depression.
Yeah, Miami. We're never betting Miami again.
Okay, never coming from the guy who's a Miami fan, and the one guy who doesn't really care for Miami picks them, and the fan doesn't. So it's like
I was talking about the Canes. The Dolphins won. The Dolphins, what I would have bet the Ravens in the minus the points there 10 out of 10 times. I'm just thrilled that the Dolphins won a game like that. Like, it is what it is. That game I'm not mad about. That game,
yeah,
it's a shitty beat.
I'm with you on the Hurricanes.
It's a shitty beat. Like that game technically, cuz you're up 35-14 with fucking a quarter to go. Like, there's no reason you should lose. But at the end of the day, like, it happens. I'm not mad about that one.
You know what my response to that
is? Fucking distraught that the Canes lost that for us. Like, that is a travesty that they couldn't be more competent.
Yeah. I had more. Like I said, what did I say to you, though, going into that, when we talked about that game? I was like, this is the game that we'll actually find the true identity about Miami.
And
we found the true identity.
Was that what you were going to say? I felt like you were going to say something else.
Oh, I can't remember what I was going to say. Honestly. Oh, but we're talking about the Miami Dolphins game. I was like, you know what my one response to that is? It's football. It's exhilarating. It really gets you going.
It really gets you going. This episode is brought to you by Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill in Moline and Davenport. Chase away your Sunday scaries at Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill this season. Located in the Belgium neighborhood of 7th Street in Moline, Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill is home to some of the Quad City's best food and drink specials. On Sunday, there's no better place to be. Clint's is serving up 75-cent wings and $4 Bloody Marys all day. And is your favorite team playing in those out-of-market games? Well, you'll never miss a second of the action on one of their 10 screens with NFL Sunday Ticket. And after you've had your wing and bloody fix, finish off your football watching experience with one of their famous Quad City style pop pizzas. And folks, they know pizza. They've been spinning QC style pies for the last 22 years. So make Clint's part of your Sunday football routine. Clint's Draft House Pizza and Grill, 7th Street, in Moline. And also, Clint is now serving up their famous pizza and fried chicken on the Iowa side of the river as well. Clint's Pizza House and Chicken opens up daily at 4 p.m. so everyone in the Quad Cities can enjoy their QC-style pizza and Henny Penny fried chicken. That's Clint Pizza House and Chicken, 7th Street Moline and 1601 West 3rd Street in Davenport. All right, that's going to do it as always here for the Educated Ignorance Podcast. Big thanks to Mac for week 4. Really excited for our big slate. Be sure to check us out on Sunday for the For Fantasy Sake big show on Sunday from 10 to 11:30. I'll be back on there discussing our picks some more and chopping it up with the boys. DJ will be there. Can't wait to see him on Sunday morning before kickoff. Until next time, that is going to do it for us. Next time you will hear from us will be Monday morning. We'll talk to you then Sunday night after the Sunday night game. Enjoy your football weekend. This has been the Educated Ignorance Podcast. Always, as always, remember, if you ain't got your game, you best pass the sticks. We're out. We'll see you on Sunday. Talk to you then. Peace, everybody.